Add a bit of sunshine to your home with Easy Living Furniture's Garden Furniture Sale. With stunning dining sets, cracking egg chairs and relaxing sun loungers that are in stock and ready for delivery, there really is something for everyone. And with an extra 10% off sale prices and free delivery over £399, now really is the time to let your garden shine. Garden Sale now on. Visit Easy Living Furniture. Don't miss out. Find your local store online at easylivingfurniture.ie.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Laya Healthcare, looking after you always. Proud sponsors of Real Health with Carl Henry.
Hello, welcome to Real Health. Me, Carl Henry, in association with Laya Healthcare. Folks, I won't lie, I am extremely excited today. I've got someone in studio with me who I love to talk to. It's like a busman's holiday when we catch up, and he's going to give us lots of content over the course of the next 25 minutes. Earlier this month, the WHO released a report that said obesity had reached epidemic proportions in Europe, the disease causing 200,000 cancer cases and 1.2 million deaths a year. Here in Ireland, over 6 in 10 adults are overweight or obese, and we rank 9th in the table of 53 countries for obesity. It's scary stuff, they're scary stats, and we need to chat a little bit more about it. And to discuss obesity, the impact it has on our health, and how the HSC is aiming to treat it, I'm delighted and honoured to be joined by Donal O'Shea, HSC Clinical Lead for Obesity. Donal, a very big welcome back to the show.
Yeah, no, delighted to be back and delighted we're discussing the issue again.
Absolutely. So since the last time we chatted, obviously WHO have come out recently enough, big scary numbers, big scary stats, and for probably about 3 days scared everybody, and then it's kind of falling into the background as per normal.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a massive report. Like, it's a 222-page the most comprehensive report and the most up-to-date, but it's still based on statistics that finish in 2016.
Okay.
Doesn't take into account what's happened as a result of COVID, and we know what COVID has done has caused a bump in overweight and obesity, particularly in adolescents and young adults. And that will translate into later life. So this report for me, you know, I've been, and we've, a lot of us have been very disappointed with the progress we're making in Ireland around, you know, preventive measures. The pace isn't quick enough. Access to treatment, we're in the bottom 10 countries in the developed world. And that's very disappointing. The only reassuring thing for me in this report is that every single country, the graph is the same. It's upward. So there is no country that's currently winning in prevention. There are other countries that are doing much better on the treatment side. Okay. But whatever we're doing in any country, the food and drinks industry and the physical activity environment is still winning in terms of driving weight in the wrong direction at a population level.
And is that even in the likes of the Nordic countries, you know, Finland, because they'd always been kind of the poster boys in many respects?
Yeah, the Nordic countries, you have pockets of regions within those countries that have done well for a short period of time, but you take the overall population. So you look in at the Irish data and you drill down into it. If you go to the better off, better educated areas in Ireland, the rates in children are downtrending. Okay. For overweight and obesity. The trouble is it's being disguised when you take the whole population by the less well-off, less educated areas where it's continuing to rise. And the rise in those areas is bigger than the decline in the better-off areas. So we're uptrending.
Okay, so the report was built on 2016 stats, and since then your take on it is things have got worse.
Things have definitely got worse. We have that data from the UK, who do very particular measurements in their 5-year-olds and 12-year-olds annually as they go transition from different stages in school. And the last year's data was a bump of 25%. On previous years in terms of the overweight levels in their children and adolescents. So, and you think about the restrictions and the impact that had on kids' physical activity, their social interaction, everybody's food environment changed during COVID.
And initially it changed, I think, for the better, Because there was a certain, or maybe that was our take on it, but with the forced stay at home, forcing people to stop, you saw a huge rise in the people doing marathons on balconies and press-up challenges and all that. I think for the first couple of months, people did try and get healthy and tried to, there was a lot of cook-along-y stuff and all of that. And then it actually went, people went the opposite. They just got fed up with the lockdowns.
That's right. I think, you know, and I think there's definitely, there is more home cooking going on. There is more home preparing of meals going on because of COVID. But there has also been an absolute, you know, spike or, you know, growth in the Deliveroo, Just Eat, Click, and, you know, you can have it delivered. So I think people may be eating a little more healthily. But with COVID, we're eating more often and we're defaulting to the takeaways more often than we were, I think, across the whole population.
And it's important to say that a takeaway every now and again is perfectly normal, fine, healthy. It's the quantity of takeaways we may have.
It's the quantity, it's the portions within the takeaways, and it's the frequency of it. And, you know, people say to me, you know, well, pizza is very bad for you. You know, pizza does not have to be bad for you. You can have a really lovely, healthy pizza. And we'd have pizza at home probably once a week. Not takeaway. But, you know, so you can't brand a food and say that's bad.
Yeah, food is food, right?
Yeah, food is food.
For the most part.
Yeah. And it's portion, size and frequency. And if you can look after both of those, then you are much more likely to trend towards a healthier weight.
So frequency, that's a personal responsibility, presumably, the frequency that you order the food. And that comes down to obviously stress reactions, but also to the handiness. The portion thing, that brings us naturally to kind of calories on calorie counts and calories on menus. Very topical over the course of the last couple of weeks. I heard yourself on with Adrian Cummins and Claire Byrne a few days ago.
Yeah.
I have my own take on it, but I'm fascinated with on your take on it. We're probably a line, I would think. But
yeah, I mean, I went to New York in 2010 or 2011 to have a look at how they were doing calorie posting.
That was for the TV show, wasn't it?
That was for Operation Transformation. Yeah. A lovely trip. And two things happened on that trip. The New York City Department of Health, the head of that said to me, yeah, calorie posting is good because it works. So, you know, push for it. But if you can get a sugar tax in, that would be even better. So I came back from that trip kind of with two agendas. The calories on menu boards has been, you know, it works. Mm-hmm. And it's proven to work. It's proven to impact by about 100 calories per purchase for 30% of people who are looking at the menu. That's a massive,
huge
reach. At population level, genuinely, only vaccination would have that kind of population reach as a health measure. So this is something that works. We've had ministers after ministers say, we will legislate, it will be the law of the land. And we're still sitting here hearing that it's been shelved. And, you know, for me, that's a quick win. Get it done properly for 90% of restaurants and 70% of their offerings. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to apply to specials, and it doesn't have to apply necessarily to sole traders as restaurants.
And nor does it have to be 100% accurate. It can be a ballpark.
Exactly.
Because I know one of the big pushbacks from industry is the fact that it's the cost of getting it counted up. It's the cost of, it's even if it's 80% accurate or close enough to accurate, it'll, and even myself, if I go to get a burger randomly, which sometimes we absolutely do. That's normal. Yeah. There's a couple of the fast food restaurants who have put their calories on the menus in the restaurants and in the drive-thrus. And even for someone who's in the industry, it absolutely impacts your decision. Or if the burger has 500 calories or 600 calories, you'll know that across the rest of your day, you have a deficit to, in some respects, to allow, not to allow for that, but you know what I mean? That to have it as a, and enjoy it.
Yeah, and you'll have the burger, and I think it's like you'd say, but the portion of fries, that's got either, I can go 440 calories or 660 yep. calories, so I'll go the 440. And you just, it just influences your decision making. And I think the other thing that the New York Department of Health were strong on is, it is the conversation on the road to introducing it that's important. So we have been discussing this in Ireland for the last 12 years. And that brings with it awareness of the fact that energy in is important, the amount of calories you consume is important, and you'd like to know it. And the degree to which the food and drinks industry oppose us finding out what's in what we eat. I mean, they don't want us to know, and they are opposed to front of label, front of pack food labeling, which the consumers, 95% of consumers want, because the more information we have, the more they will have to modify what they're putting into it. And that kind of reformulation, that's where the sugar tax won. When the sugar tax was introduced, apart from the money it's raising, all of the major drinks companies introduced sugar-free varieties.
Yeah.
And you suddenly had people going in able to, you know, have one of their favoured products and zero sugar, close to zero calories.
Chat to me about weight and the impacts of weight. Okay, so I know it. It's my job. It's, yeah. what I, it's the world I live in and the world I deal with from a work perspective. But, you know, we talk about weight for a reason, which is the fact that by being obese and a few issues with that, the weight's become very normal. So that 1 stone overweight is now normal. 2 stone overweight is now pretty much normal. Yeah. But by being obese, that the more overweight you are, you're at a higher risk of pretty much everything in terms of health-related issues and health-related diseases, and even in terms of the aging process and how we age,
yeah.
that we're aging less healthy or more unhealthy because of the fact that we're carrying more weight than we should.
Yeah, so I mean, the effects of weight are they're mental, they're physical, they're financial, and I think that the first and the most important really is that psychological effect, and the seeds that are sown in the adolescent or child who has overweight or obesity, and the stigma and shame that they suffer. So if you have overweight and from an early age, that's the environment that you're living in. A few years ago, we started to bring patients to any talks we were doing. And I remember walking through Dublin Airport with a patient for the first time and actually seeing the looks that she was getting and the comments and the looks I was getting for being with her. So the psychological effects are massive. The physical effects, you know, there's that very physical, you know, the strain on your joints, but the inflammation that goes hand in hand with excess adipose tissue drives every disease. I mean, there's 220 diseases now that we know are linked to having obesity or overweight. The big ones we know about, the diabetes, the hypertension that leads to heart disease. The cancer story is emerging, you know, with more strength every single year. And it's not just having cancer, but it's your ability to respond to the treatments you get. One of the really encouraging stories of COVID was after that fear with the first wave, where individuals who had obesity were really more susceptible to severe illness, to getting into ICU and to dying, either having COVID or getting vaccinated gave you fantastic protection as an individual with obesity. And with all previous vaccinations and pandemics, the vaccines haven't worked in people with obesity. And it's amazing that it has been that effective. So
Okay, so it makes a big difference from every aspect as we get older in terms of being overweight or obese. Folks, you're listening to Real Health with me, Carl Henry, in association with Leia Healthcare. Two other topics I really want to chat to you about. The other one that's an obvious go-to after the chat there is childhood obesity. What do you do with it? I know I have quite strong opinions on it in terms of what I think as a society we need to do. And that's based around, I suppose, if I was a minister, I would say, okay, I would test schools and I would test fitness levels and I'd incentivize bleep tests and fitness scores. You get an extra 50 points in your leaving cert if you go past 7 in the bleep test or something like to incentivize the idea. It's such a topical area, weight and children, weight and childhood obesity, that people are almost afraid to even discuss it, which is why I'm delighted that we're discussing it. What do you do? How do you fix is the wrong word. What do you do?
I think the WHO report is a bit depressing, again, from that point of view, because it shows every country is uptrending overall and every country is struggling. How do you deal with it? I mean, you have to go back to the basics of energy regulation and healthy pregnancies into a healthier food environment. So we have the lowest breastfeeding rates in the developed world and the highest percentage of people that are breastfeeders in this country are the immigrant populations.
Wow.
And their breastfeeding rates are good. You make a decision. So a girl of 14 has already decided whether she is going to breastfeed or not, based on the environment that she has grown up in and the attitude that's been shown to it, they will know by that age. So if you really want to fix childhood obesity, you have to be in the schools educating the parents of 15, 20 years' time, so that they're thinking about being, you know, healthy. It's a given that they will breastfeed. And it is a given that they will prioritize not only their kids' nutrition, but their own nutrition, because as role models within families, and that's what parents are, if the kids see you doing it, they're going to do it.
Next up is genetics. Become more and more popular over the course of the last while in terms of the genetic component of obesity. I know how I am genetically built. I gain weight really quickly. It takes me a little bit longer to lose weight. I've been like that since I was a kid. I have sometimes where I put on weight and sometimes when I don't. But people are fascinated by the genetic component of obesity. That are you predisposed to it? Are you not? But also, is there a role, even if you are predisposed to it, to personal choice?
Yeah, so there's several hundred genes now that have been linked to having overweight and obesity. Some of those have a big role and most have a very small role. And there is a massive genetic predisposition to your ability to put on weight, which in survival terms back in the hunter-gatherer day was a big advantage, and now in the environment we live in, putting on weight easily is a disadvantage. There are treatments being developed around certain of these genetic abnormalities. So now when we're taking a history from a patient coming to our clinic, we ask, did you put your weight on? You know, when did the weight start going on? If you start putting your weight on under the age of 5 and had obesity as a specific problem, then there is a 25% chance that you have a particular gene abnormality that we can test for. And there is a treatment that you will be able to start that will reduce your weight by 30%.
Wow.
And that is a treatment that is now available in Europe. Of course, it's very expensive, But we're getting to a point where the small contribution of many genes, which is just kind of your family tendency, versus individual gene defects, and I don't like using the word defect, but gene mm-hmm. changes, yeah. Are going to be targetable. And this new drug is going to change the lives of some people who were especially predisposed to putting weight on. And you know, under the age of five, no matter what your food environment, you really should be burning, and just on the go all the time, so that you shouldn't have significant obesity. So that's a question we're now bringing into our if you like, our assessments.
So there are genes there that absolutely increase your chances of having it. But still, the choices you make will determine the level to which you have it.
Correct. And you know, we do know they've done some fantastic work on this. You have a genetic predisposition to obesity, but if you have an environment and an activity and an eating lifestyle that is, you know, pro a healthy weight, then you can negate 85-90% of that genetic predisposition. It's as much as that. And your food environment and your physical activity environment involves a huge amount of personal responsibility. And in the current environment, you know, for me, the fact that, you know, we'd say it's bad that we have 25% of our children have overweight or obesity, but 75% don't. 75% of families, 75% of parents are, despite the environment, doing a job that is keeping their kids' weight at a healthy level. And that's good, but some of that is happening with crap diets. Mm-hmm. And it is inevitable that when those kids hit 16, 17, 18 and are becoming less active, that with those poor diets, the weight is only going to go one way.
Talk to me about treatment then. I know before we came on air, you were saying some, you know, potentially really good news around that. There is the treatment for obesity, obviously, is surgery. And with the new drug coming online, that may change things.
The new drug for children who put weight on under the age of five is going to be relevant for a small percentage.
Okay. So adult obesity, it's surgery is the route.
Adult obesity, the treatment, you know, is not eat less, move more.
For those who have severe and complex obesity.
So you get skin cancer because you have a genetic predisposition mm-hmm. and you get too much energy from the sun for those genes. And we don't tell you your treatment is sunscreen and wear a hat. You develop obesity because you have a genetic predisposition and you get too much energy from the environment for those genes. There is a lot of people who eat the same amount as you and I who have severe and complex obesity. Mm-hmm. We would not have been able to say that 15 years ago. 15 years ago, it was inevitable that if you had significant obesity, you move were more, overeating all the time and just eat less, move more. So you cannot tell somebody with severe and complex obesity that eat less, move more is your treatment. It is a part of your treatment, like putting on the sunscreen and wearing a hat is a part of managing your skin cancer well, so you don't get more of it. What we have now is surgery as a very effective evidence-based treatment, and we now have medication that's coming that's licensed in Europe, not available at the moment at the weight loss doses just because of a supply issue, honestly, at the moment, because it's going so well in America that the company are having difficulty, you know, organizing their supply. And these medications are hormone-based, and they, you know, a single hormone-based treatment can give about 17% weight loss, but they're combining these now as, you know, two hormones together or three hormones together that are giving up to 25% weight loss, which is weight loss equivalent to surgery. Mm-hmm. Now, surgery is a one-stop shop. You know, you have the operation and then you have to...
And people think it's as simple as having the operation, and it isn't, really.
It's absolutely not.
It's a great myth to be able to dispel for people. It's not just, you don't just go in and walk out and all of a sudden, you know, the weight's falling off you. It's hard work, pre and post.
Yeah, surgery is a tough road. And it's a road that most of our patients are really reluctant to even think about when they come to our clinic. And we have to convince them after working with them for 6 months that, look, surgery is the best option for you. And we now know, you know, when you remove a half or a large part of the stomach creates a whole load of different hormones. The stomach creates hunger hormones. The stomach creates hormones that slow your energy burn. So when you remove half of the stomach, your hunger hormones drop. Some of the hormones that were switching off your energy are gone. So your energy levels, energy burn increases. So the mechanism through which the operation works, we're beginning to explore and understand more and more. And that in itself will lead to, you know, better understanding leads to better treatments. But we are at a point now where we have a range of options that are safe and effective for treating your severe and complex obesity.
If we're sitting here, hopefully in a year's time, and we see progress, My question is, what three takeaways can our listeners take from the episode with yourself that you think progress on a personal level for them? What are the three really important? If someone's listening in who is overweight or obese, and we know what it's 6 out of 10 adults in Ireland, so 6 out of 10 of our listeners, and if they're 12 months time tuning back into an episode with yourself and myself in a healthier place, what are the three simple or most important things you'd like them to take from today's ep?
I suppose the maintaining a healthy weight or maintaining your weight and not gaining. So anybody who comes back to our clinic and has not put on weight, they're making an effort.
Okay, so weight maintenance is really important for your health.
Weight maintenance is huge. And the key to weight maintenance is self-monitoring. So, and all the discussion about does that trigger, etc., you know, it doesn't. I think there's very good evidence that stepping on the scales once a week or once a fortnight and just knowing that you're holding your own is great.
Okay, so tip one, weight maintenance.
There has to be, and this is going to sound really basic, but I mean, it's the things I'll be telling myself when I'm thinking about next year. Physical activity levels that are, you know, at least, I'm going to say 5% built from last year. So I remember when I was 45 deciding I'm going to do my age plus one in press-ups. And I don't know why I decided it, but I was delighted after because I said, okay, that's something that I'm not going to let go down with age. You know, I've stuck to that maybe 5 mornings a week, you know.
Of course, that ties in with Roseanne Kenny's research and report that as you age, you should move more, not less.
Oh, and as, you know, the number of people, older adults who come to me and they'll be concerned about a tremor. And they think it's Parkinson's or something. And it's just loss of muscle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a bit of, you know, resistance with their water bottles or light dumbbells. And the tremor's gone. And they're delighted. So, tip two, move more. And then it has to be around the fruit and veg. And nutrition. I mean, like it's not rocket science.
In some respects, that's the challenge, isn't it? That in all fairness, every time we chat or anyone talks health, who is responsible and who's qualified, I suppose, is the word I would use. It's not sexy. It's move more, eat better, you know, more fruit and veg, balance. It's a lot of the same kind of stuff. And I suppose that's the hard sell, is that you're not selling something sexy and new and all the rest.
And then from a HSE, you know, what should people expect of their health service next year? We need to see access to surgery for people with severe and complex obesity improved. We need to see access to drugs that are becoming available. We need to see those getting some reach. And it has been an extraordinarily difficult process trying to get the health system to press go on establishing 3 surgical centres for managing severe and complex obesity. And you were talking about the decision-making system in business, where it's a simple straight up to the top and back down. We went to the top a couple of weeks ago to Paul Reid to say, it's not happening again. There's no surgery for severe and complex obesity planned for next year. And in fairness to him, he said, and we brought it to him because he's the chief executive of the organization, said, look, we've told everybody else. He said, but it has to happen. And we need to start it happening now. And there has been a flurry of activity over the last couple of weeks. And 3 centers are being sent out who to start recruiting for next year to get start increasing access to surgery for severe and complex obesity. So if by next year there are not 3 centres, one of ours, we'll be grown, but one in Galway will be properly funded and one in Cork will be started. If that hasn't happened by this time next year, then the HSE, if you like, yardstick for what will things look like in a year will be a big fail from my point of view.
I could sit here all day talking about this in my ear, telling me to wrap it up. Every time we chat, I'm fascinated by your level of knowledge. You're like the Gandalf of health. It's fascinating.
It's all I do. I do obesity, and it's, you know, I love it.
I think people listening will get your passion for it, and well, we've always got that, obviously, but also you've got content, and it just comes out, and it's fascinating, it's brilliant. We will, as ever, chat in the future. We love having you on, and as do our listeners. It's been fantastic to see you. Keep up the cycling and all the press-ups, very important.
Thank you.
Donal, thank you so much for coming in. Folks, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, in association with Leia Healthcare. It's been fascinating, and I could sit here for a lot longer. I hope you've taken from it exactly what I have and put those tips into action. As ever, you know where we are, at Carl Henry PT on Instagram, realhealth@independent.ie, and we'll see you next week for more Real Health. Slán go fóill.
Leia Healthcare, looking after you always. Proud sponsors of Real Health with Carl Henry.